Hey, podcast friend, how are you today? I hope this finds you well. You're listening to We Are the Church with Sherry Jones, and I'm your host, author and inspirational speaker, Sherry Jones. I'm so excited to chat with you today. Our conversation is about the church and breaking generational curses. Now, that's a heavy topic, but today's guest, Jerry Dugan, shares how he overcame the dysfunction in his family to break those curses. Generational curses could be a number of things. Maybe everyone in your family is overweight or has diabetes, and they expect you to do the same. They tease you about wanting to eat right and exercise, but that's okay. You can be the curse breaker. Maybe everyone in your family has experienced divorce, and now you're afraid to get married because you know it's going to end in divorce. That does not have to be your fate. You can be the curse breaker. Jerry's testimony is amazing, and if he can do it, you can too. Get ready for this dynamic conversation. I know it is going to be a blessing to you. We're about to get started after a word from our sponsor. Hello, podcast friends. I am so excited to talk to today's guest, Jerry Dugan. Today, we are talking about a pretty heavy topic, breaking generational curses. But Jerry has a very unique perspective on this topic that I think is going to help you. So just to tell you a little bit about Jerry, he is the co-host of a podcast, Beyond the Rut podcast. Awesome. You need to check it out. Not right now, but after you finish listening to this one, check it out. He also experienced some things in his childhood that impacted him. He saw his parents get divorced. He witnessed his father attempting suicide and was bullied in his own extended family. So going through these experiences gives him firsthand knowledge on breaking generational curses. So Jerry, thank you so much for being with us today.
Sherry, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So let's hop on into our topic, generational curses. Some of our listeners may not understand what that means or what a generational curse is. Can you give us the definition?
I kind of understand this in two different ways. There's sort of the definition or the understanding that I've got, and then I've heard other folks use this other one. I guess I'll start with a more extreme one. The extreme one would be that a generational curse would be like the sins of our forefathers in a sense. So the sins of our father, grandfather, great-grandfather, on back to our ancestors have done things that made themselves not right with God. And that has carried itself over to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And so a family may be struggling with issues of some kind. And if they dig back deep enough, they'll realize, oh, it's because that started, you know, many generations ago, or we made ourselves not right with God. And I think there are a few stories in the Bible that really hone in on this. I think God a couple of times punishes, you know, the ancient Israelites about, hey, well, because you did this, this is going to impact the next 14 generations. And I wish I could come up with a very specific scripture, but I just now remember that as I'm talking right now, I'm like, oh yeah, I have read this in the Bible before. But then there's the one I've just seen with my own eyes in some of the work I've done as an adult. So one of the jobs I've had in my life was community educator with a battered women's shelter and sexual assault crisis center. And one of the things I would hear about are the stories about the men who were court ordered to go to a batterer's intervention program. And one thing that really stood out to me was when the program director shared with us that she had taken in a new student. And the new student was disclosing his background, the crime he had committed against his partner. And in that same circle was his father. And also in that same circle, about to complete the program, was his grandfather. And so the director thinking, wow, I am looking at three generations of men who all beat their partners, abuse their partners, commit acts of emotional abuse on them. Mm-hmm. In this room right now, because all three of these generations learned this behavior of abuse and now have been court ordered to come through the same program. And, you know, she just wondered, how do we break that cycle? And, you know, even in my own family, I don't know how far back this goes, but I just know that when you look at many of my uncles, you know, they struggled with drugs, alcohol. There was one year where divorce just pretty much hit the entire Dugan family at the same time. All the uncles, except for like one, maybe two, went through divorce and the impact that it had on their children. So seeing my cousins start to struggle with drugs, alcohol, depression, suicide was very rampant among them. And then, you know, just, I don't know why, but I was able to kind of take a step back and say, this needs to stop. You know, like, this isn't the life I want for me. I don't want this life for my children and their children. So when does this branch away? And now the odd thing is I'm starting to think like this before I ever even became Christian. And so learning about generational curses and the impact that we have on the next generation and the next generation really came after the fact. You know, as I became a Christian and started to learn more about my walk and my faith and how to grow closer to God, then, you know, I start to learn more about that.
Yeah, that is so good, because you knew enough to recognize that something needed to change even before becoming a Christian. But then once you walked into your relationship with Christ, then it really opened up to you as more of an understanding of what this was, that this was something that was deep rooted in your family. And the example of three generations of men in this program, that's just mind blowing. But we learn from what we experience and we learn from what we see. Children have the example of their parents as far as how to operate in the outside world. So if the parents are dysfunctional, if the family is dysfunctional, then the child is going to be dysfunctional.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really no other way to, you know, to avoid that. And so, because you experienced all this, all these things with, like you said, your uncles, with the divorce, with the substance abuse, and I know you experienced things in your personal life, in your personal family, your immediate family. What are some things about your past that people wouldn't understand just by looking at you, or they wouldn't see it just by looking at you?
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, when people get to know me, when they meet me, they interact with me. The Jerry Dugan they're familiar with is this very positive guy. He's always optimistic. He sees the silver lining in things. You know, we could have, you know, just recently I was driving home from Corpus Christi to Dallas and I got rear-ended on the highway in front of Waco, Texas. Woohoo. Bitterness towards Waco. Well, that's not for this show. But anyway, so I got rear-ended in Waco, Texas in my car. And I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, because I see this semi rig in the rear view and that's the next in line to hit us. And it doesn't. But when we pull over, there was three of us cars involved and I get out and my first thought is I'm alive. I didn't get hurt. This wasn't enough where my airbags deployed or my airbags are defective. What's one of those? I looked at the damage on my car and there's nothing. And you know, there's like maybe a little tiny 2-inch line from the car behind me. And I look at behind me and it is totaled in the front. I look at the back of the car, it is totaled in the back. The car that hit us and started the chain reaction is totaled. And I'm just thinking, wow, how did that happen? But then right away, I'm just thankful that everybody was okay. And so, you know, they were kind of curious, like, how are you staying calm in all this? Like your hands aren't shaking. You're not mad. You're not, you know, scared. You're just like, you've got this calm about you. And I said, well, I have to keep this in perspective. These three things that got damaged are just cars, are just things. And that dog in the last car are the most important things. And everybody's okay, you know, rattled, but nobody's physically hurt. And so that's the good thing. So that's what most people know about me is that. So I'm working my way to the thing people don't know about me when they look at me is that when I was 11 years old, my parents got divorced. And, you know, we had decided we were going to live with my dad because it was, you know, something my mom had done and she had left. And so we just thought, well, it makes sense. I mean, she left my dad, so she'll probably leave us too. Let's go with our dad. Mm-hmm. And he had just gotten orders. He was in the army. He got orders to be stationed in Germany. So my brother and I, we go to Germany with him. And the first night that we're in Germany, we're making dinner kind of just sandwiches because, you know, we're a bachelor house now and that's what we make. And I hear my brother scream and I look up and my dad's holding a butcher knife to his chest. And, you know, my brother's 9 years old and we don't know what to do. So all I could do is I hear my brother screaming and I yell, "Dad, what are you doing?" And he doesn't put the knife down, but he releases his grip on it and we're able to take the knife out. And, we basically hid every single sharp object in the house that moment. So for about 3 to 4 months, my brother and I are now on suicide watch because we warned to secrecy. Don't let anybody know. They'll take you away from me. But my dad clearly needed help, but we didn't know how to get that for him. So all we knew was we stick together and, you know, we created this system to keep him alive. We administered his meds to him. We tracked his movements. He had to let us know when he was leaving for work, check in with us. And this is before cell phones. And so there was no text message. There was no GPS tracking. We basically stalled from going to school until he called us from the office and said, I'm at work. I'm okay. And then one of us would run home from school during lunch somehow. And we had to have a call from him then. And of course, summertime came. So that made it easy. One day it was my turn to watch him. And he closed the door. And, you know, it took me a moment to realize, wait, we have a rule that is he never goes behind a closed door. And when I opened the door, he was hanging from his closet. From a lanyard that we didn't realize he had. It turns out it was a part of his uniform. And, by the grace of God, because I couldn't lift him up. I was 11. He was, you know, in his 30s at the time. He weighed close to 200 pounds. I weighed maybe 80 pounds. And I just screaming out. And again, this is before I was a Christian. And I just scream out something like, you know, "God, please help." And that moment, the rope snapped. He fell to the floor. I thought he was dead. Get my brother. Comes in. So the blessing there, though, is he had a rope burn on his neck. And Army regulations, he couldn't hide it. So he had to go in his uniform with this big rope burn on his neck. And his unit realized he was seriously depressed. He was seriously trying to hurt himself. And they got him help. And so that was, you know, very traumatic, 3 to 4 months. We didn't know how to nap. You know, my brother and I probably healed from that two different ways. You know, I kept myself busy. He went down the road most folks do with, you know, substance abuse and, you know, just a lot of self-destructive type behaviors. Family had to go through some counseling. And, you know, while this is going on, we're trying to heal from this event. I mentioned earlier, all the uncles in my family seem to go through a divorce at the same time. And so my cousins are also struggling with their own father's depressions. And I had one uncle in particular who was like the ringleader of the bullies. Actually, I had two different bullies, two different styles. And as the biracial kid in a white family, I got called plenty of names like boat person, gook, chink, jap, nip. Mm. Name it. It was called, that was my name for about 3 years. And it was supported by my grandfather. And, whenever I fought back, I was the bad kid who could dish it out, but not take it. I'm like, I'm not dishing anything out. I'm the one taking it and I'm responding. How are you not seeing this? And they did a good job of hiding this from my dad. So, whenever I'd bring it up to my dad and, you know, he didn't necessarily confront them outright because he's going through his own stuff he's got to deal with. By the age of 14, got into a good fight with one of my uncles, to the point where he was choking me. I got away and I just went into hiding for about 4 or 5 hours, but it was enough to get them to notice. And I'm not advocating running away is the thing to do, but I didn't really run away. I just hid in the garage underneath some garbage and, stayed, you know, I was like, I feel safer underneath this pile of junk in my grandfather's garage than hanging out with my family. And, wait until it's time to head back home. I don't know. We go to my grandparents' house every weekend. I just get beat up every weekend when we come up here. And so my dad finally realized what was going on. And he said, okay, you never have to come up to your grandparents' house again. And that was, you know, a good 3-year window of hell. And I just this, why live through this? And I'm not going to kill myself because then, you know, then my dad has a reason to do it. And I guess maybe that was the big motivator. Like, I can't do it because it's going to let my cousins win. It's going to let my uncles win. It's going to be the thing that drives my dad over the edge. And so, yeah, by the age of 14, just realized something's got to change. You know, I'm looking around at my uncles, their lives are falling apart. I'm looking at my dad's, he's barely holding it together. I'm looking at my cousins and they're following the same path and they're struggling with the same drug and alcohol issues that their parents are. And their outlook on life is that when I'm 16, I'm going to be emancipated from my parents and I can start collecting SSI and that's it. And their mentality was like, Jerry, you're always reading. Why do you read? You're never going to get a job reading books. And it was just like, no, something's got to be different. And I think I shared with you before we even came together on the call that I wrote a Christmas card to pretty much everybody in my family. And the ones who were the total jerks, I just said, you know what, you know, one of these days you're going to look at me and say, I wish I had done that. And cousins that didn't pick on me and the aunts who didn't pick on me, I just said, you may notice that when people hear the Dugan name over here, it usually is associated with security following you around, or there's some sort of lawsuit involved, or there's some sort of police record involved. I want to make you proud. I want to change the trajectory of this family. And I want people to hear this name and be proud of it. And yeah, that was the whole background to sending out a Christmas card that could technically be off-putting, a little Joseph-like, you know, from Genesis. But there was a lot of anger behind that, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, what a awesome testimony. And you said so much, but what I wanted to tap into is, as a young person, that was a huge responsibility that you and your brother took on, having to monitor your father, check his meds. You know, I just can't imagine young boys having to take on that responsibility, mainly as like you all were the dads and he was the child. And I think that sense of responsibility actually carried over into your last point about how you didn't want to commit suicide because that would give your father a reason to do it, or how that would look on your family. So you took on that personal accountability of being the one to correct the sins of your family because you already had a sense of responsibility for your father from everything that you went through with him and everything like that. And so how did having, I guess, that type of mentality and putting that weight on yourself, how did that impact your life?
Oh man, it definitely put me in a position where I can safely say that I never quite fit in with normal at that point. Mm-hmm. Because normal in my family, of course, was very dysfunctional, very self-destructive. Normal with my friends back at home, at school, was very different than what I really experienced. So, just weird. And it being biracial, you know, like I was never really part of one side of the family or the other. So in my Asian family, I'm the white guy. In my white family, I'm the Asian kid, the half breed, and all those other derogatory names. So I had to accept being different. And, you know, accepting that at 14 years old, and I don't even know what permitted me to be different. And except that I was different and odd and weird and saw the world in a completely different way than anybody else around me. And, but somehow by accepting that, I was able to kind of create my own path and kind of look at the best of the worlds around me. And I started to notice other things. So, you know, my family image is, you know, one of dysfunction, one of self-destruction. And I started to look up and realize, but when you look at my friends, a lot of them have their parents together still. And when I look at, you know, this person over here, not only does he have his parents together, they do this thing called family vacation together.
Wow.
Want to go? Like what? Well, I don't understand. What is that? Tell me more about this. And, you know, they would show me, you know, they would tell these stories about the things that they did while on family vacation and that this person really looked forward to it every single year. And here are the things they get to come home with. And these are the things they did while they were there. And they can't wait to go again. And they're going to go somewhere else a few months later. And it was like, I don't understand. My road trips are because my dad has to take me to go visit my mom, in another state. And then every weekend I go to my grandparents, but I get bullied when I go up there. And so I'd rather not go. And I'd rather go with you. How do I do that? And they're like, you can't, you're not in the family. I'm like, oh, I need families. And so there was that. And I guess the simplest way to put it is, I mean, you know, God just sprinkled these little lessons in front of me and enough of them that I was able to look up and notice it and say that that's part of what I want to build for this new trajectory. That's the new branch I'm building. That's, that goes into that. And, you know, so, you know, there was a season of time when I even picked up the Bible and started to learn about Jesus, but then I stopped short of receiving him as my savior and I put the Bible down and then I become this like uber atheist or agnostic and start like pointing out all the intricacies that are wrong with the church. I became one of those guys for
from
15 until, let's see, when did I go to Iraq? I was 27. So about 15 to 27, there's a 12-year window there where I'm like the antithesis of the Christian. It's like, this is what's wrong with your church. This is what's wrong with your belief system. This is what's wrong with you. And this is what's wrong with the Bible. Right. And like, boom, 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 boom. And then, yeah, Operation Iraqi Freedom, 27 years old, almost getting my head shot off a couple of times. And my wife making the deal with God, it turned all that around. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I mean, all, like you said, all of those years, not believing and just like you said, being the opposite of Christian and having, I guess, like you said, that experience of almost losing your life or realizing your own mortality. It took that to, I guess, bring you into what was there all along, because you did take the time to read the Bible at one time. And so you knew that you were different. You knew that it was something about you that was going to help your family, that was going to break these curses. But maybe at that time, you didn't understand how to do it. You knew it was something about this book that was drawing you. It was something about this Jesus. But then, you know, it kind of flipped and you became the opposite. And then one thing I wanted to tap into as well with, you were talking about, you know, being biracial and that dynamic and how that impacted how you were treated in your family and your view of the world. How do you think that impacted your desire to break the generational curses?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I never thought, you know, that's something else I need. Well, maybe I did. Because one thing that I definitely wanted my family to be built upon was a couple of maxims in a way. First and foremost was the woman I married was going to be somebody who I truly trusted was going to be with me for life. And then vice versa. I was going to be with her for life, not because we had to, because we put a ring on and we signed some documents, and not because some church said you have to be together till death do you part, but because we both make that vow on our wedding day till death do us part. But here was the key thing. But because we also want it to be that way. So, and I have that. I have a wife who wants to be with me thick and thin, and she has been with me thick and thin. And you know, we see each other growing old together and doing old people stuff. And our kids will say, well, you're old now, so do stuff. And we're like, I'm not old. Be quiet. Stop. And because of that foundation, we knew that we're going to be aligned on a lot of things. And there's some things we're not aligned on still to this day, 19 years later. You know, we knew that our children were going to be important to us, and how we raise them has to also have a foundation of love. And we start with loving each other. We follow that with loving them. And that means being, well, now, you know, that we're Christian, Christ-centered, which a key part of that is having grace at the core of how we parent. So yeah, our children are going to mess up. Yes, we have to bring consequences and teach them how to not do that again. We also have to give them grace so that they learn from them their own mistakes and understand that the consequences we're bringing are so that it protects them in the future from the next time this comes up. And so I think those are probably the two foundations that my wife and I love each other till death do us part. That's our primary relationship, second only to our relationship with Christ. And then the second one being that our children are loved in a grace-filled way. And yeah, I hope I answered the question. Just sort of rambling there.
Oh, no, that's... No, you did fine. You did fine. I mean, definitely tapping into how you are, you know, parenting differently and approaching your relationship with your wife differently because of, you know, how you were treated and not want your children to experience those things as well. So I think that, you know, definitely taps into it. And so now that, you know, as you said, you went through all those years where you weren't Christian, you were just the opposite. What moment, I guess, actually turned you around to become Christian? And then how has your Christianity impacted your family? Have you been able to evangelize within your family and help them?
Oh, yeah. Wow. I mean, if you were to ask that question to Jesus himself, mm-hmm. he'd respond with, man, that Jerry is one stubborn, bullheaded guy. because I am pretty confident it wasn't any one specific moment that got me to say, oh, yes, Jesus is the way. It was a series of events over the course mm-hmm. of a year or two until the pivotal moment. So the first thing being the eve before, the eve of Operation Iraqi Freedom. So this is March 19th, 2003. I'm with 3rd Infantry Division. We're on the border between Kuwait and Iraq. And I remember this clearly because we had just been ordered to change into our chemical suits. And, you know, throughout the day, rockets have been flying overhead from Iraq into Kuwait. And we later learned that was Iraq shooting at the camp where we used to be. And we're like, aha, I tricked you. We moved.
Wow.
And so, you know, because that's what the U.S. military does. We have a plan. Everybody knows the plan. And then we change it on you at the last minute so you don't actually use it against us. So, yeah, I'm changing to my chemical suit. And I don't know why, but I start to notice, you know, people are a little scared. You know, because we're going into another country and we're going to possibly kill people and be killed ourselves. And I don't know why, but I just had the sinking feeling that, Jerry, you're going to die. And and so a couple of things happened. The first thing was I kind of, you know, in the movies, they always have like the two army buddies or Marine buddies who swap letters like, hey, in case something happens, you know, send this to my wife or send this to my dad, the farewell letter. And so you give it to somebody you trust to mail it for you. And that did happen to a degree. There are some people who exchanged letters. Except I felt like I didn't want to jinx anybody with that letter. Like if I hand it to you, you're going to be the one who dies. So I'm not going to put that on you. So I wrote my letter. But I didn't want to write it as a final farewell to my wife because then she'd freak out. And, you know, it wasn't guaranteed I was going to die. I just had the sinking feeling. So I basically wrote her one more letter. It was sort of a just in case. And it was just filled with all the ways I love her. And I just remember that about me. And then I mailed it. Because we had one last mail call before we go. So I mail that. It's like, you know, I'm not handing this off just in case. This is going. My wife is going to know I love her all the time. Mm-hmm. This is my resolve here. And then so after I mail it, I'm still, you know, taking my dandy old time changing on my chemical suit. And I stop midway. And I again, because I hadn't finished changing in the first place. And I just say this prayer. And I still remember the prayer to this day. And I was just like, God, if you're real, you better replace me with somebody who's better than me, who's going to love my wife as if that's his first and only wife, and is going to love my two children, because by then Emma was on the way, and is going to love my two children and raise them as if they were his own, and they will not know the difference between me and him. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even say amen. It was just like, God, if you're real, you better do this. And then I go and I finish changing into my uniform. And a couple hours later, it's dark and 3rd Infantry Division rolls through the border into Iraq. And then there's Operation Iraqi Freedom. And, you know, a couple of times there, we were in a couple of firefights. And I remember getting ready to run out into some open area. But the last moment before I ran, I'd hear, Doc! And I turn around and there's nothing back there. There's nobody behind me. But I heard somebody behind me yell, Doc! But then as I turn back around to finish running to where I was going, bullets would be kicking up where I was going to be. It happened 3 times while I was in Iraq. And I just thought, huh, I just shrugged my shoulders. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Okay.
You still didn't see.
Yeah. I was like, this is so weird. Like, am I going crazy? Is this stress? Is this what stress does? And then I just go on about my day. We finish out the tour. My daughter's born while I'm in Iraq. It was April of 2003. And then I get to go home. And then I'm thinking, well, God, guess I don't need you after all, because I made it through and you didn't have to replace me after all. And so, yeah, you already laughing because you know about
that. Yes, you are a myth.
And then I get home. My wife picks me up. We have that homecoming ceremony. They're playing all the patriotic music for us and everything. And my mom had come down to Fort Benning from North Carolina. My brother had come over from California to be part of this reunion. My wife, of course, is there. My son is there. My newborn daughter, she's 3 months old, and I'm meeting her for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Sorry. So there's three cars and we're driving back to my home, and my wife wants to drive with just me. And my mom sets it up like, yeah, just the two of you, you guys go. And now we get in the car, and one of the things my chaplain told us on the briefings before we came back from Iraq was, hey, all that money you thought you got here tax-free while you're in combat because you're in a hazard duty zone, none of that money is going to be there if you're married. It either went to new furniture or a boyfriend. Nickname for the boyfriend is always Jody. You know, it either went to new furniture or Jody. If you got new furniture, I tell you, forgive your wife, thank her for the new furniture, and move on. If you got a Jody in the picture, call me. We will counsel you through this. It's going to be a tough time. And so, mm-hmm. as we're coming back to the house, my wife says, Jerry, I got to share something with you. And I don't want you to be mad. I was like, oh
wow.
Let it be new furniture. Hey, did we get new furniture?
No.
And so I just,
no couch, please, Lord.
Like, oh yeah, we got a lot of new furniture. Is that what you thought this was about all the money from your deployment? I was like, yeah, is there any left? No, but you got new furniture. I think you're gonna like it. I was like, ah, good. And she's like, but that's not what I need to talk to you about. I'm like, oh, please let it be like surprise furniture or a new computer. And she said, well, while you were gone, you know how we were shopping for a church before you deployed? I said, yeah. She goes, well, while you were gone, I hope you're not mad, but I was praying for you. And I was like, oh, really? And she said that the whole time I was deployed and the whole time during the war, that she prayed to God that if you bring him back in one piece, I get choked up every time I tell this story. If you bring him back in one piece, I promise you, I will bring my family to church. And I can't guarantee you'll come to, you know Jesus, but I will bring my family to church if you bring my husband home in one piece. And I was like, huh, that's funny. And so I was just like, well, if you made that deal, I guess I got to honor you and honor that deal. So again, no intention of becoming a Christian. It was just sort of like, well, it's a big deal to her. Let's go ahead and do this church thing. And so I'm sorry I'm telling you the long version of the story here, but we're in Georgia. We get a church recommendation from one of my squad mates, and for the first time, it's probably the most welcoming church experience I've ever had. You know, my daughter had some separation anxiety type of stuff. So every time they pulled her number up to go to child care and hold her, I kept volunteering for that. And then my wife realized what I was doing. She's like, well, you went like the last six times. I'll go this time. You just go ahead and sit here. And I'm kind of awkward. Like, I don't know any of this stuff. But it just started to sink in, and I leave the army. We moved to Texas, to her hometown, because that's where the most free babysitting was available.
I know that's right.
And we're shopping for churches again, but there's this one church we just keep going to over and over and over again. And a couple of things are going on in that church. The first one was, I didn't know this, but the numbers stopped flashing over time that go pick up your daughter who's crying. So what that church had done was they had one volunteer and one volunteer only whose sole job was to show up at the 10 o'clock service on Sunday, take this cute little baby girl, sit in that rocking chair, hold her, and don't stop rocking that chair until mom and dad come to pick her up.
Oh, wow.
That was his job. And that went on for about 6 or 7 months. And in that time, at the end of the 6 or 7 months, our pastor is doing this, the closing prayer to the sermon. And I'm just nodding, and he just blurts out there. And if you've been like shopping Jesus for the last year or two, I'm here to tell you, it's time to stop shopping. It's time to take that finger and just have that relationship with Jesus Christ. You know you already need it. You already have that relationship. Now just commit to it. And I thought, how does he know?
Like, I know, right? He was talking directly to you.
I'm looking around like, oh, he's talking about, I don't know that guy. And I'm looking around to my left shoulder like, I don't know either. I'm like, how does he know? Like, is he watching us? Like, I go home and search the house for like cameras and microphones and stuff. I'm like, I guess this is it. And so that's when I actually prayed that prayer of salvation right then and there. It was just, some people report having this like light moment and, you know, like feeling angels around them and stuff. I didn't have any of that, but I did feel a lightness on my heart. Like all of a sudden, the anger that was in my heart was gone. The bitterness that was driving me to change the family trajectory was gone. The only thing that I saw as being my purpose now was building into this community of the church for my wife, for my children, and maybe one of his children. And ever since I took that focus and that day and took that focus in my life, the things that he's done through me have just blown me away. And they're nothing like big. It's not like I've published a best-selling book or I've got this big show or, you know, it's not about fame. But, you know, just impact on my wife and I. And we're just doing this for our, you know, to honor God, honor each other, and, you know, raise our children up. And, you know, to have couples come forward and say, hey, you're kind of the example we follow.
Wow.
We're better off not knowing that because now there's pressure on us. You know?
I know, right? Like, ooh, the microscope is on you now.
You know, people look at our children and once in a while, like especially when our kids were going through high school, they had friends who were bitter towards them because they were like, oh, you know, it must be nice that your parents have it all together and your parents are still together and they love each other. And I'm like, and you still say I love you to your dad. And my son came to me one day, or maybe it was my daughter, one of my kids came up to me and they were just kind of hurt that their friends had said these things. And I just thought, wow. So let me get this straight. Your friends are mad at you and they think it's a bad thing that you have two parents who love each other. And they're just like, you know, that is kind of weird and stupid. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of upset because your parents love you and you say, I love you back to us. He goes, yeah, but it's all I've ever known. I can't see us doing this any other way. And I actually feel bad for them because they have it rough at home. And I was like,
yeah,
wow. And so just realizing that, you know, this was maybe just a couple of years ago and just realizing that this whole time God had been using us as a model for other families. And then, of course, then my life goes back and rewind and flashbacks because this is when God starts hitting me over the head with stuff. All right, I mean, this is where I was with you. Remember this time and remember this time and remember this time. And so I remember telling like the deployment story to somebody from our men's ministry. And the guy just kind of pointed it out. He's like, you ever think that maybe God was protecting you from getting killed those three times?
Mm-hmm.
That. Do you ever think that maybe God actually did snap that rope?
Yeah,
that's weird because my dad did mention when he left the army that the physician who did his physical was surprised because he had a couple of breaks in his cervical spine where just by the way the breaks were and the scar tissue and everything. He's like, how are you still alive? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, well, you have scar tissue here and here. You actually should not be here. You should be in a grave somewhere else. And we actually would never have met. When did this happen? And, you know, so then that clicks. I'm like, oh,
wow.
Goodness.
Yeah.
And then I guess in one of my Bible study groups, we're studying how, you know, Jesus makes a new creation in you. And I'm like, so you're born new, like you're a whole new person. And like, what's this whole dying thing? And they're like, well, your old self dies and you become this new creation. And then I remember in that moment, that prayer that I told you about on day one of Operation Iraqi Freedom, you know, God, when you die, you better replace me with somebody who is. And as I was thinking through that prayer, I'm like, son of a gun.
Wow.
I'm like, son of a gun. And I'm like, God, you are good. You're good. I mean, played, good sir. And they're like, what? Like, I said it out loud. I think somebody looked at me like, oh, I got to tell you the rest of the story. So I tell them the story. Like, wow, that's very, very powerful. We never knew that about you. And so, yeah. So how it's changed us, the walk in Christ, it's just given us focus. It's given us something to live for. And that's, you know, God and God's kingdom. Whenever my wife and I have a struggle in our marriage, being Christ-centered reminds me that my wife is on my side and she is my teammate. She is not my enemy. There's a different enemy out there that is trying to break us up because of the impact we could have on others. Whenever one of our kids mess up, having that grace, you know, make those mistakes, but then be there for them to coach them through, not to bail them out, but to kind of coach them through so they grow from it. You know, that is what having a relationship with Christ has done for us. That is way different than what I've seen the rest of the world going through.
So powerful, so powerful. And yes, the Lord was with you all those times. Yes. He listened to you and saved your father. And everything that he did was leading you up to the moment of where you are right now. And just a powerful testimony. I appreciate you sharing all of that with us. And one thing I wanted to ask is, say there's someone listening right now, our listeners, and they're hearing this powerful testimony and they're hearing how you were able to change your life from, you know, watching your father and making sure he's not committing suicide, going through abuse and divorce and everything that you went through in your life to this wonderful life in the Lord and being able to be the example for your family and break those generational curses. And they're saying, I need to break the generational curses in my family. My family is dysfunctional and I want to be like Jerry and I want to step out. What would you tell them? What's the first thing they should do?
You know, Elsa from Frozen probably said it best in her song, Let It Go. That's all that's screaming in my head right now. Let it go, let it go. And I think that was probably the biggest thing, that when I received Jesus as my Savior, I let everything else go. I let my bitterness towards my grandparents go. I let my bitterness to those towards those two uncles go. Any bitterness I had towards my dad for not sticking up for me sooner, I let go. Bitterness towards my mom, let it go. You know, anything the army had done to me or didn't do for me, I just let all that go and just let Christ in and really, truly reshape my frame of mind. Cause all those things still happen, you know, you know, witnessing that at 11 years old still happened, being bullied by my own extended family still happened. You know, hearing my grandfather say how disappointed he is in me when, you know, just a year before he died, that still happened. Mm-hmm. All those things still happened. But when you let it go and just let God fill your heart and fill your life, every being of who you are, it doesn't make you immune to other things. Like my wife and I, we still had other struggles as a Christ-centered family. It's just by being Christ-centered, we had a focus that got us out of all those situations. You know, there's a whole slew of things that we probably don't even have time to get into, like, you know, going into real estate right before the market busts and almost losing my house a number of times. Again, you know, things you wouldn't know just by looking at me. It's like, you know, you're looking at a guy who almost had to think about how do I put my family on the street? I can't. You know, seeing my wife bring $14 in change to me so I could put gas in my car to go show a house to a client who didn't buy a house. You know, you just know that God's got you. Yeah. He's not going to do it for you, but he's got you. Yeah. He's going to open up some doors. There's going to be some connections right there in front of you. Everything you need is already either in your hands already or right in front of you. Just needing your leap of faith. And, it's never too late to change your trajectory. I mean, I was 14 when I made that decision. And then I was 27 when I actually received Jesus as my Savior. You know, the pursuit, though, to live better than I did yesterday, to live for something higher than I did before, you know, that it's never too late to pick that up. And you really can make, I mean, we're talking about a God who specializes in bringing dead things to life. And we truly believe in Jesus, and we think that career is dead. That may be true. That particular job might be gone. But the opportunities that God has for you and the direction he's going to take you, those are still there. And you just got to look forward and see it and then go after it. So.
Powerful advice, listeners. I hope you all received that. You just shared so much good stuff with us today, Jerry. I just appreciate you being here. And I know that you are the co-host for a phenomenal podcast as well, Beyond the Rut. If you could tell us just a little bit about Beyond the Rut.
Yeah. Beyond the Rut podcast is a weekly show that discusses the areas of faith, family, fitness, finances, and future possibility. And the hopes of our show is actually to inspire folks to live a fulfilled life driven by purpose. So everything I just talked about, when Brandon came up to me and pitched the idea for this show, and he needed my help to help him produce it and get it out there, I pretty much dropped a previous show I had to do this. We don't do it for money. We know there are people out there who have sponsorships and they have Patreon supporters. We have been doing this for 5 years now, and we have collected $0 and 0 cents for the podcast. We're doing it for the money. We're doing it for God's glory. Brandon, the host of the show, is a pastor for Grace Community Church in Corpus Christi, Texas. I met him when we were both serving in a men's ministry. He's a good friend of mine. He's also a lot older. I just want to point that out. Older than me. Team, and I like it. So 44 or not, I'm still the baby on the team. Brandon, that was for you. Okay. So we tend to publish Tuesdays or Wednesdays. You can find us at beyondtherut.com. We're on Facebook, Beyond the Rut. We're on Twitter, Beyond the Rut. We even have an Instagram page, but we never post on it. So if you want to go there and see some pictures that we posted 2 or 3 years ago, you're welcome to go. And we did experiment with like a short video series called like Jump Starts with Jerry, where I would go for a run. At the end of the run, I would talk for 2 or 3 minutes and post that on YouTube. So we're on YouTube as Beyond the Rut as well. But beyondtherut.com is where you'll find most of our stuff. If you're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music now,
exciting.
There. So yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Jerry, I could say one thing that I think our listeners will get from this conversation about breaking generational curses is that you don't look like what you've been through.
Thank you.
And that's the power of the testimony of Jesus. And that's just his restorative power that he gives us. I can say I don't look like what I've been through either. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners can say the same. So if you can just give us any closing remarks, any final thoughts that you would like to leave with our listeners.
The biggest things are you can make a difference. You know, if you're thinking my life sucks, I'm stuck in this rut, nothing's going to change. There is a small pivot that you can make and a leap of faith after that, or a step in faith after that. And if you just keep going in that new direction, you'll find yourself out of the rut that you're in now and into a groove. And just stay vigilant about that and keep yourself in that groove, and you'll find yourself living a good life with purpose and fulfillment.
Yes. Thank you so much, Jerry. I enjoyed this conversation today. Listeners, I hope that you glean from this conversation, from this powerful testimony of how you too can break generational curses. You do not have to stay in the same mindset of your family. You can do as Jerry did. But thank you all for listening, and we'll chat with you next week. Thank you for your presence and your listening ear for today's episode. I hope that it was a blessing to you. Please make sure you check out the show notes for information on how to connect with today's guests and follow this podcast on social media. You will also see information on how to connect with me. I have a new coaching program that's rolling out later this month for aspiring writers. It is called How to Speak Life with Your Story. During this 5-week group coaching program, you will learn and go through all of the pre-writing process, answering the tough questions and preparing yourself heart, mind, and soul to write an impactful story. Check out the show notes to join the waitlist. I would love to hear from you about today's episode. You can send me an email at wearethechurchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're interested in being a guest or advertising your business products or services on this podcast, send an email as well. I look forward to chatting with you next week. You take care, be blessed, be safe, and remember, the church is not a building. We are the church.